This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Dustin Hoffman and Anna Hastert.
From the top floor of the AI building in the shadow of the gold-domed capital in the city of Des Moines, this is Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman, along with Anna Hastert.
Hello, hello.
So we have gotten through another week here at the studios, and you know, maybe it's just August is so busy, or is it just a quiet week, or do you think it was just a combination of both?
I think it was a combination of both. We're waiting for a lot of news out of Washington, D.C., but there has been no set deadline for any of that news that we're waiting for. So who knows? You know, the farm broadcasters joke that all of the news, the hard-hitting news at least, comes out on a Friday afternoon when nobody really wants to be at the office anymore. So we'll see if anything comes out here after we put the show together. But for the most part, yeah, it's been a relatively quiet week. It's unusual, but kind of nice after we've been at the state fair and you being at Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and then both of us being at Farm Progress Show last week. It's just kind of been a nice getting back into the groove kind of week.
You know, though, there have been things going on, and one of those things is Hurricane Dorian has slammed its way now into the southeastern part of the United States. And as we're recording this for the weekend, we are knowing that it's hitting the Carolinas, it's hitting Virginia. I know I have my sister-in-law and my niece and nephew and her family all live in Virginia Beach, and so we have been wondering how they're doing and are waiting to hear from them. But again, this is something that we have been watching for 2 weeks, it seems like. We've been watching this slow, methodical trek that this storm has made. We were at Farm Progress Show at the beginning of last week, and they were talking about it hitting into the Caribbean, so this thing has been moving very slow.
Yeah, but the good news is, Dustin, out of all of this, is that the storm has died down a little bit, now at a Category 1. So it has died down a little bit still, just not what we want to see. I mean, nobody ever asks for a hurricane, no matter what the size is. But the good news is, yeah, it is showing signs of weakness here, and hopefully it will come to a rest soon.
So another thing we're looking at as well is one of the things we're waiting to hear about is, what is President Trump's huge deal going to be for ethanol? We talked with RFS people. We've talked with Senator Grassley. I just talked with Senator Jim Talent, one of the authors of the RFS. There's a lot of question marks as to what his big deal is going to be, and we haven't heard too much here at press time of what that could be.
Yeah, I read some commentary out from Allendale Inc. this morning, and it said that somebody familiar with the matter said that President Trump's going to release a deal that benefits not only the agriculture industry, but also the oil or energy sector, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a bargain we get out of that will be beneficial to both sectors that kind of compete with each other there. So hopefully we'll see more demand for bio-based fuels in that proposal, but we'll just have to wait and see.
You know, and Senator Grassley has said whatever he decides to do, the president, that it has to hit the mark because it's critical for President Trump's relationship with the biofuels industry. But it's interesting you talk about something that's going to be fair for both sides of this issue. And I just literally got off the phone with former Senator Jim Talent of Missouri, who helped write the RFS. And if you ask him, it was already pretty well written to be beneficial for both sides of this argument. So I'm interested to see where we go from there. Another thing we've been talking about is trade. Japan. I mean, we know we have a structure going. USMEF had some people there, including we had Dean Meyer there, a director for the Iowa Corn Growers Association, was over there. You know, it sounds like the people in Japan are very excited about getting this done, especially meat buyers and consumers, because now they know they're going to be getting the U.S. products in, and they have an idea what the price is going to be going forward once this is finally ironed out and signed.
Yeah, this deal with Japan, Dustin, looks really promising. Excited to see what this does for U.S. producers, especially U.S. beef producers. But we're also hearing news about or updates on the U.S.-China trade negotiations. Envoys are supposed to meet in early October, hopefully ironing out this ongoing trade war, hopefully putting an end to it before year end. I know that's a really hopeful thought. But any signs that we can meet together are always good signs. So hopefully we'll continue to make progress on that front and try to make a deal that's favorable for both parties.
And we have heard from Senator Grassley and a few other lawmakers that they are fully expecting USMCA to hopefully be ratified by the end of this month. So he seems to have support on both sides of the aisle now to get it moving forward. I know that would be another one of those dominoes to fall in the trade wars as well, or not trade wars, but trade negotiations as well. Anna, you've been watching the markets all week. It's one of them back and forth. It seems kind of quiet and low energy, but the market year is almost over. September is getting ready to come off the board here. The first notices were out. It should be coming off here at the end of the week. What are we looking at as we get ready for the next market year?
Well, Dustin, if I have any advice for farmers right now, it would probably be to not watch the market super closely. It's a little bit depressing, to be honest, and I'm not even a farmer. So the markets, as you mentioned, Dustin, have been fluctuating. I feel like we're riding this roller coaster up and down, and we're just getting jostled side to side. And so the markets this week, corn hit contract low midweek this week and was able to pull itself back up a little bit by end of the week here. But soybeans, they looked fairly decent throughout the week, also trying to reach some contract lows there. But you know, they're just trying to kind of figure things out. We received news that there doesn't look to be a potential for frost this month, which is great news, wonderful news, what we need to get this crop across the finish line and into the bins here this fall. But the markets don't like that news. You know, the markets are a funny thing. You have good news for the farmers, but then the markets say, nope, this isn't good news for us. And they kind of react differently than you think that they should. Brian Grossman, who is now with Lakefront Futures and Options out of Chicago, been in touch with him most of the week here. Glad to have him back on our programming here this week. But Brian just kind of says, you know, farmers need to grin and bear it. He understands times are tough, and I wish that he had better advice for everybody. But, you know, that's just kind of the best advice right now. Just hang in there. Hopefully we'll get the harvest in here soon and see better prices heading into the new calendar year.
All right. Well, those are the kind of things we've been watching this week. You know, it's amazing we were able to talk for 7.5 minutes about a quiet week, but we sure were able to. You know, we mentioned the beginning Hurricane Dorian, and so we're going to go into my segment right now talking about an Iowa company that's doing something to help people who are refugees or victims of big natural disasters. Well, let's listen in. It has often been said that waiting is the hardest thing to do. When it's an approaching natural disaster like a hurricane, the waiting becomes even more agonizing. We've watched for 2 weeks as Hurricane Dorian made its slow, methodical trek towards the southeast United States.
Tornado warnings have been rampant this morning along the Carolina coastline. This is going to be the scene throughout the day. Dorian is a dangerous storm. It's still a Category 3 with winds of 115 miles per hour.
The storm spent roughly 36 hours battering the Bahamas.
We're happy to be alive, glad that my family is safe, and, you know, we can rebuild.
The storm finally hit the United States and turned up the eastern seaboard, keeping its center offshore for as long as it could.
The center now, about, say, 75 miles away from us here, still out in the Atlantic, but we're still having the push of the wind and the rain.
As we see the devastation in small countries like the Bahamas, we wonder what can be done. One Iowa-based company is putting its talents to use in helping people get through these devastating times. Sukup Manufacturing is known all over the country for their steel grain bins and grain legs, as well as their steel buildings. Now they've partnered with GoServe Global to help the victims of disasters such as earthquakes and hurricanes with their safety homes. These homes look very much like a small grain bin. They feature doors, windows, and a loft for people to sleep in. I caught up with Steve Sukup at the Farm Progress Show, and he told me all about these homes.
The safety homes have just been a great fit for people since 2010 when the earthquake hit down to Haiti. Our safety manager came up and said, hey, I think we could make some emergency shelters for these folks, because all you saw was the blue tarps all across there. And these homes have changed lives down in Haiti.
And I was going to say, you know, you talk about that area, you know, there are either earthquakes or hurricanes. There's always something going on. And when you have that disaster, getting your homes rebuilt and all that, you know, doesn't happen overnight. And you said, in a blue tarp, that doesn't offer you a whole lot of shelter.
No, and especially just on the news now, it sounds like the weather's going to be hitting fairly close to them again. So I know one of the last ones 2 years ago, they put 50 people in one of these safety homes and let the 140-mile-an-hour winds just batter it. And everybody came out great.
Yeah, it's amazing. So basically what we're standing in here is basically looks like the inside of your normal typical grain bin.
Yes, and you know, always the question is, oh, it's going to be hot when you go inside. Well, like we just came in out of the sunshine in here. If we had a thermometer set out, it'd be 12 degrees cooler inside than outside.
Definitely all about the ventilation and getting that heat out of the building, get that chance to get it out.
Right. We have a patented double roof on here, so it allows good airflow, filtration, and works super.
All right, so we'll have some pictures of this on with the story on the website, but tell us a little bit about, you know, obviously we're standing at the structure. It's got a platform up towards the top of the ceiling there, and it allows some room for these people to be able to survive during these situations.
Yes, and the loft was one of those, we always like listening to good ideas at Tsuka Manufacturing, and after the first year, somebody says, you know what, with that extra space up top, I think we could put up a loft, get a little bit extra storage, a little bit more sleeping capabilities, and so a house like this for 8 to 10 people really fits the bill.
And I'm sure it probably doesn't take a whole lot of time to construct one of these, you know, in a situation like that when they're, you know, needing to put them up.
Yes, no, at... Everybody's generally put up a grain bin if they've been in the Midwest, whether it's Iowa, Illinois, or wherever. And so about 8 people can put one up in 8 hours, and you can start and have a finished home.
All right, so you're getting success not only in Haiti but around the world with these as well, right?
Yes. We've got them in 5 different countries. We've shipped over 400 safety homes. Rachel, one of our directors, has been over to Uganda, came back where they had 30 safety homes built. And then also we sent one of our steel buildings over there that they can use as a church and a community center. So if somebody wants to get involved, it's safetyhome.com and or off of the sukup.com website, and they can...
According to the Safety Homes website, it only costs about $7,000 to erect each home, concrete and all. It provides much more durable shelter than tarps or temporary shacks. It is nice to see an Iowa-based, family-owned company not forget what the important things are in life. When people are facing a large-scale natural disaster, they have many things they must worry about. Getting a safe place for the family to stay and be protected until they can get their life put back together is the most fundamental base to rebuild your life on. We should all be proud of Sukup Manufacturing. They are truly exemplifying what Iowa values are all about. To find out more about the Safety Home Program, just go to Google and search Sukup Safe, the letter T, Homes. There you'll find all kinds of information on the project. All of us at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network would like to extend our thoughts and prayers to all those affected by Hurricane Dorian. It was almost a year ago when Hurricane Michael wreaked so much havoc on the farmers in the southeast, destroying what they thought was some of the best crops they had raised in a long time. For some, this may mark the second year in a row that a hurricane has wiped out a fairly decent crop. We'll be back right after these messages. The 2019 harvest is underway, and we here at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network want you to take time to be safe this year. Harvest accidents happen in the blink of an eye. However, many of these accidents can be prevented by just taking a few minutes to be prepared. Taking a few extra minutes to be prepared and safe can be the difference between an easy harvest or disaster. 10 minutes of safety is worth a lifetime with your loved ones. Remember, no matter what you harvest, the most important commodity you bring home is yourself. All of us here at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network wish you a safe and bountiful 2019 harvest.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Anna Hastert.
And welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters, brought to you by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm farm broadcaster Anna Hastert. Many can recall the God Made a Farmer commercial, which aired during Super Bowl 47. The advertisement, paid for by Ram Trucks, did more than pay homage to America's farmers. It also set the Ram Agriculture Dealership Program in motion. Pat Driscoll shares more. Pat, let's just talk about Ram and where you guys started and where you're at today.
You know, it's a great question, and I appreciate that, Anna. Thank you. So the Ram Agriculture Dealership Program, I think everybody remembers the God Made a Farmer Super Bowl commercial from 6 years ago. Hard to believe, 6 years now. But that was the impetus for the beginning of this program. And where we are today is we have a network of now 300 dealers, give or take, across the country that are specialty dealers in working with the farm and ranch customer. And what does that mean? What it means is that those dealers have gone through specialized training that myself, as a former farm broadcaster and a farmer, have created. I've got a team of 14 people. We're all farmers, ranchers, and agribusiness people. We created training to help dealerships understand who the farm customer is, what their business model is, what motivates them and drives their decision-making process, how they can integrate as a farm supplier into the farm operation. We require a minimum of at least one each from sales, parts, and service to go through that training. So no matter where the farm customer touches the store, they've got a go-to ag person. So that's what it means on the front end. You have a knowledgeable dealer, somebody that knows you as a customer. What it means on the backside is when you do business with one of these agriculture specialty stores, they can offer what's called Ram AgPack. That is this amazing group of agribusinesses that have come together as partners in this program that put extra value on the agriculture truck for the farm and ranch customer. So that takes form in financing, and then it takes form in savings in the farm's operations. So financing, we have a relationship with AgDirect Farm Credit Services. So now a farmer can finance that truck right through the dealership with AgDirect. They can get payments on that truck that match the farm's income cycle. So in the fruit business, you have quarterly payments on everything because we get paid quarterly for fruit. You know, a lot of times the beef guys like the semi-annual payments to pay out of the calf crop. Corn, soybean growers typically like those annual payments. Whatever the farm's cash flow, you can get a payment term on the truck through the dealership that matches the farm's cash flow now. Then you've got all of these other partners, Goodyear Farm Tire, Titan Tire, Agro Liquid Fertilizer, NK Seed. All of these companies have put product with that truck at the ag dealers. Last year, in 2018, we saved the average farmer $8,900 in operating expenses just because they bought a truck from an ag dealer. That's where we are today, and it's only going to get better from here.
Yeah, and Pat, it's really important for those farm operators to have a truck that really fits their needs. But what have you heard from farmers? What are they asking for in a Ram truck?
Durability is number one. We beat the snot out of our trucks, Anna. You know that. We are not kind to our trucks. And that's been a real focus of Ram and everybody all the way to the top. Up until just recently, Jim Morrison was the head of Ram trucks. He's a farmer. He gets it. And so there's been a real priority on building trucks that can hold up specifically to farmers because they know that that's the real battleground for a truck. So durability, number one.
And why would you encourage a farmer to stop by one of your ag dealerships?
Well, again, they're going to be working with a dealership that is knowledgeable. They're going to understand who you are as a farm customer, and they're going to be able to offer you AgPack, which you cannot get at any other manufacturer store. You can't even get it at other Ram stores. You can only get it at Ram Agriculture Dealerships. You can find your nearest Ram Ag Dealer at ramagdealer.com, or you can go right to ramtrucks.com and click it on the Agriculture tab at the top, and that'll bring down a menu that ultimately will let you find very specifically agriculture dealers.
Anything else you want to add in regards to this ag package that you offer to farmers?
No, I just want to say thank you for stopping by and visiting with us today. You know, awareness is everything, and we're working very hard at making as many farmers aware of what Ram's doing in the space as we can, and it's through your help and these kinds of interviews that happens. Thank you.
That was Pat Driscoll of the Ram Agriculture Dealership Program. For more information about the program, visit ramagdealer.com. I'm Anna Hostert reporting.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Agriculture began the modern era with the Russian Grain Deal of 1972. It was the first time demand had outstripped production, and U.S. farmers were shocked to see that their grain had value that exceeded the government loan rate. They had mechanized in the war years of the 1940s and had then been given incentives to produce more wheat and corn than the domestic market could digest. As a result, farmers were almost totally dependent on the government and had to live frugally to keep their land and survive on the thin line of profit above the cost of production. In the post-war years, Russia's political system was moving into crisis as ours was moving out. Nikita Khrushchev knew military hardware wouldn't fill anyone's stomach, and the Soviet's agricultural system was not capable of feeding its people. The surprisingly pragmatic leader took resources that could have been used to build infrastructure and bought food from his arch enemy. Although our political differences were great, both sides agreed the sale of grain would be good. The upturn in U.S. agricultural profitability for the remainder of the 1970s was astonishing. People had never seen the markets bid for their crops, and they found themselves awash in wealth. The first step for most was to secure their position by paying debts and fixing roofs. But the next step was to catch up with a consumer world that had been producing luxuries for over 20 years. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Index of the Farm Standard of Living was abolished within a decade because farmers were able to secure a livelihood and lifestyle that paralleled that of their city counterparts. Farmers bought machinery, built barns, and took vacations as they enjoyed prosperity and equality. It is clear to me as I look back at the 1970s that the decade set up the catastrophic drop of the 1980s. Economic reality bites really hard. The monetary inflation and growth of agricultural enterprises in the 70s caused those who had spent all their adult lives struggling to glean a livelihood from farming to believe they would spend the rest of their lives in tall corn. Farmers took on debt and increased the expense of their basic livelihood until the era and the decade ended and low interest rates and high inflation swapped places. The plunge of the 1980s was almost indescribable, as many farmers thought they were doing fine until the banker informed them otherwise. The value of land and machinery was rolled back until their balance sheets turned upside down, and proud people were bankrupt. The joy of the 70s became the agony of the 80s. It could only be compared to the high-flying times of the 1920s versus the bleak and black 1930s. The economic toll was great, but the human toll was even greater. Desperation became the best word to describe those who were taking off-farm jobs, consolidating debt, and walking away from financial obligations. Those who had struggled through the 1960s and surfed through the 1970s were now submerged in the 1980s. It was a brutal washout that soured many to the point that their children were encouraged to take a career outside agriculture and leave the farm as soon as possible. But the cycle continued as the farm crisis quietly resolved itself late in the decade. Historians pegged 1988 as the end of the greatest farm recession since the 1930s. Those who began farming in the 1990s were able to build equity in a conservative manner, and most are in business today. They saw a brief spike in farm prices in 1996 that got everyone excited, but it died within 1 year. There was also a prolonged period of Asian flu that kept exports from having much value until the greatest period of prosperity emerged in the new century at the beginning of the ethanol decade. As the political aspects of ethanol subsidies and mandates moved into the mainstream, farmers saw billions of bushels of corn being purchased for use at nearby ethanol plants rather than being shipped thousands of miles to export markets. In parallel, the world's appetite increased. Our consumer goods were being purchased from Asia, and they were using it to buy grain to improve their workers' standard of living. The market began to rise in 2006, with most farmers missing the highs due to marketing strategies they had used to keep from going broke. Then, weather issues, from floods to drought, caused prices to spike, and the new boom was underway. Agriculture sustained the longest period of prosperity in history through 2013, with Midwest grain farmers making as much as $250,000 profit in 2012 on a 1,400-acre farm. The drought years prevented farmers from expanding production, but the productivity cycle was not to be denied. High grain prices caused millions of acres to be planted worldwide. When a farmer is prosperous, everyone around him benefits. Over the prosperity period of the 21st century, the industry pumped hundreds of billion dollars into the general economy. But in 2015, with good weather going all the way through 2018, we saw an increase in productivity, an increase in surpluses, and lower prices. Trade issues have now stepped up to take our exports down even more, and the cycle has headed downward, with no indication that it will come back. A rugged economy makes it tough to stay in business as a farmer. Those who farmed as a way of life are gone, and those who farm as a business that offers a good lifestyle are in control. History says the cycle will continue, but there's no certainty as to the rhythm and rate of recovery. We have lived on exports for four decades, but have grown domestic markets as well. Both will determine the farmer's future. Trends and cycles will continue as long as there is a capitalistic system. Business consolidates in both good times and bad. Some people go out the top, and others fall out the bottom. A good decision in one decade can become a bad decision in the next. A farmer is a great friend of the overall economy in good times, but he is his own worst enemy and damages those around him when things go south. We should be thankful for the abundance from the land. We are insulated from hunger for another year. We have food for the world at an economical price. Their own fortunes or attitude determine whether they will buy our bounty. And the sad fact and reality is that this roller coaster ride sends a message to all farmers. It will never end. For Weekend Ag Matters, I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and we want to thank you for tuning into this weekend's edition of Weekend Ag Matters. Don't forget you can find playbacks of this show and all our news throughout the week at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Iowa Ag Radio on Facebook and Twitter. From all of us at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network studios in Des Moines, we wish you a great week ahead. We'll see you next weekend on Weekend Ag Matters.